If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm
Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by the king of the figurative Power Slam. His name is Finn Martin. Finn, how are you doing? Coming to us from the east wing of the mansion today.
The east wing, yes, it's looking rather palatial. You know, after my recent DIY improvements, it's to the standards of a man of my caliber expects, Kenny. No, I'm doing really well. Yeah, I'm doing all right. Well, I'm doing as well as we can be under these circumstances. What this? Are we into week 8 now of the lockdown? I mean, I know things were slightly eased in England, or will be from tomorrow, but still, lockdown's pretty much in effect and pretty much in full effect. But yeah, week 8 we're on now, isn't it? I think that's
we
right.
Are, yeah, we're on week 8, and depending where you are in the UK, you're getting told what to do, you're getting told what not to do. But yeah, it's not bad. It's you know, I think people are catching up with people they've not seen before and not seen in a while, and they're through digital means, everybody. I'm not in any way suggesting that people are catching up in person. I did laugh.
Even though lots are,
yeah. Well, I mean, I have to admit, I did do a socially distant walk with a friend who also has a dog in the park, which I think is allowed because we weren't any closer than like 3 meters away.
And, oh, absolutely. And no doubt it was entirely coincidental that you ran into each other in the park.
Yes, there was no text exchange. There was no WhatsApps to determine an exact time. It was completely coincidental.
Well, fine then.
Yeah, you can't come after me. I do have to laugh, though. And I'm just going to read this out. Finn doesn't know this, but it made me cackle today. So Finn had reposted a thing on his Facebook about a guy who was a finance and office manager in his work, and they'd put three, like, you know, statements of what the person was, you know, like, enjoyed hobby-wise. It was motorsport and rock and metal music, and then an irrational hatred of Tom Hanks, to which the person said, "They seem to have figured me out at work, although there's nothing irrational about the hatred." And then somebody had written, "Finn, have you had the misfortune of seeing Tom Hanks' Twitter feed? He never dares to venture an opinion, and it's full of boring photographs of discarded objects. He also collects antique typewriters. I don't trust his, molectost persona. He's got serial killer written all over him," to which you responded, "Never read it. Sounds so purposefully, inoffensively middle of the road that it's liable to cause offence, much like most of Hanks' cinematic output. If Hanks' films were a bag of rebels, 9 of 10 of them would be coffee."
So well, I think that sums it up.
You've summed it up. But anyway, we're not here to talk about Tom Wanks. We're here to talk about wrestling.
Even though we do nearly every week.
Well, you know, look, if there's a joke to be had, we'll cling on to it for dear life, because we never know when it's going to run out.
And it's supply and demand, right? I mean, people want this commentary, so we're going to give it to them. Anyway, let's get on with the wrestling, Kenny.
We have lots of wrestling stuff to chat about, as always. So obviously, we're going to talk about Money in the Bank. You can hear Sandra and I gush about the ladder match on Patreon, at patreon.com/insidetheropes. But before we talk about Money in the Bank, Finn, was there anything from the pre-Money in the Bank SmackDown that took your fancy? It's always hard for us to cover these SmackDowns after a pay-per-view, but was there one or two things that you wanted to mention?
I thought the Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose match was well done. I mean, Rose beating to set up a comeback. I thought that went really well. Sonya scored the pin, which was the right result. Don't want to blow this thing off yet, so I enjoyed that. What did you think of that match?
I thought
leave an impression?
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought you definitely could tell they didn't give you 100% of what they could do. They gave you a little bit with view to a big return match. So, yeah, I mean, I thought, again, the character works really good. So, for me, a character work-based match is going to work much better for me, even if the in-ring stuff is fairly standard. But I enjoyed it. Deville's just knocking it out of the park.
Absolutely. I really feel like Mandy Rose has applied herself more to this. And, you know, she was somebody you couldn't really take seriously. And ever since the Otis feud, you know, ironically, I mean, that is just, why has the Otis feud made her more believable or a better in-ring performer? Presumably because she's applying herself more. But to me, she just seems a more in-ring performer than she did 4 months ago. Elsewhere on the show, Jeff Hardy returned. He said that he wanted another big WWE run. Sheamus came out, said he was going to extinguish the flame of Jeff Hardy. Sheamus ran in to attack Hardy, but Hardy turned the tables, hit Sheamus with a swanton and left. So presumably, maybe they'll have a match at Backlash, or maybe they'll just have a match on SmackDown. There was that. So, I mean, we knew that was coming. I didn't think there was anything exceptional about it, but I just thought I'd bring that up. Bray Wyatt offered Braun Strowman the Black Sheep mask. All the Firefly Funhouse puppets urged Braun to return to the family. Braun refused. Then he said bye and left. So Braun kind of had the last laugh there, didn't he, in that segment?
He did, which usually would infer that he's going to lose at the pay-per-view, which obviously wasn't the case. But yeah, I like when they don't give you the absolutely obvious kind of outcomes to stuff. You know, they played with it a little bit. So yeah, the SmackDown Go Home show was decent enough. It gave you some stuff to... I mean, the Sonya and Mandy thing not being in the pay-per-view, it was interesting. I think part of the reason that Mandy's starting to click is because for once they had the hot female character actually kind of get with someone that you like and not get with like an absolute cretin, as is usually what happens. So I think people are willing to give her more time, and I hope they give that partnership a good run with Otis and Mandy.
Well, I mean, as we saw Money in the Bank, it's like, wow, Otis, it's from zero to hero, isn't it? You know, go back to Valentine's Day and look at him now.
Just shows you with a little bit of persistence and, you know, a lot of food, you can go anywhere.
Exactly. So, I mean, going back to what you were saying earlier about the previous match, the previous segment with Bray, Tamina ended up pinning Bayley after a super kick and a Samoan drop in a tag team match, which kind of telegraphed the outcome of the Tamina title match at Money in the Bank. So obviously we'll get to that when we do the Money in the Bank review. I'm not really sure if there's anything else on the show that enthralling. There was a, you know, six-man match at the end of the show. Corbin pinned Drew Gulak in that match with Deep Six. It's Daniel Bryan and Drew Gulak versus King Corbin, Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura. Corbin scored the pin. And then there was like a big brawl afterwards, and then Corbin and Brian were there on ladders trying to climb up and grab the briefcase. So it was like a last little push for Money in the Bank. But I mean, not really that notable as a main event, but I guess you could say that they'd pretty much done everything that they could do to promote this show, given the restrictions and, you know, the circumstances that they're having to deal with at the moment.
Yeah, and that takes us straight into the pay-per-view, which took place on Sunday. The pay-per-view, I mean, I didn't catch the pre-show, which had Jeff Hardy getting a win over Cesaro. Did you watch that match, Finn, or did you just check out the pay-per-view on its own?
I just watched the pay-per-view on its own, so no, I didn't watch it.
Quite right. I mean, Finn, how much empty arena wrestling are we supposed to watch? 2.5 hours is enough.
It was quite right, yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the great, you know, one of the tremendous things about this Money in the Bank pay-per-view was that it was 2 hours, 23 minutes and 27 seconds, which I believe was the shortest WWE pay-per-view in something like 14 years, I think I read somewhere.
Happy days. I mean, I did read something going around online that, like, that's going to be the plan for all the pay-per-views, kind of until they can get fans back in the arena whenever that can be. So it's probably a good move, because I think when you have too many when these shows are so long and you don't really have a lot of cinematic style stuff. I mean, I think what really we saw from Money in the Bank is that you need to have something cinematic to kind of keep people's attention.
Oh, definitely. And also as well on Raw, I think it's good that they're doing segments at Performance Center. I mean, they need to have at least two of them per episode, if not more. Like, I mean, and I don't just mean like little snippets. I mean like the Street Profits and thing that was on Raw. Not necessarily a repeat of that, although I've got to say that I did find it far more entertaining watching them play basketball than watching them wrestle previous week. But I mean, I think we need more of that type of content just to break things up a bit. I think WWE is aware of that, and I think we will see more of that over the next weeks and months. I imagine it's going to be months before fans are allowed to return.
Yeah, hopefully by the end of the year. We opened the pay-per-view with the New Day defend the SmackDown Tag Team titles against the Forgotten Sons, Miz and Morrison, and Gran Metalik and Lince Dorado from Lucha House Party. New Day would retain by getting the win over Gran Metalik of Lucha House Party. I thought this was a pretty good opener, and I thought the Lucha House Party deserved some praise for working hard. What did you make of the opener?
Yeah, I mean, I think more importantly, Kenny, how much are you missing Kalisto?
I mean, is there an irony? Is there a coincidence? Is there anything at play here that tells you that Gran Metalik and Lince Dorado have been at their most interesting when Kalisto is not around?
Cannot be coincidental. We know who the fly in the ointment is, don't we, Kenny? But yeah, get back to the match. I thought it was, I really enjoyed it. Lots of action. I thought John Morrison was tremendous in this match. I thought he made Dorado and Metalik look terrific. I mean, he had done as well on, I think it was the previous SmackDown they were in the ring together. That's right, they were. They were in a match on SmackDown, May 8th SmackDown. And I thought Morrison just made those guys look like $1 million. I mean, Morrison to me was, I'm not saying he was the star of Money in the Bank, but I think in the ring he kind of was. Really an unsung hero, just doing so much for his opponents and just enabling them to shine. This was very, there was a clear between this and a TV match, which I liked. I mean, sometimes, especially now on these events, the pay-per-view matches don't seem that dissimilar from TV matches. And they should, if it's a pay-per-view match, it should be better. It should have a different sort of feel and aura to it. And I felt like this view match. I thought the ending kind of came from out of nowhere. As you say, Big E pinned Metalik with a big ending. I guess the sequence could have been a little bit more dynamic, but I mean, overall, really enjoyable opener.
And then from there, we had we were supposed to have a match between R-Truth and MVP, which was added last minute because one can only assume popular demand.
What else?
I don't know why that popped me so much. But anyway, Bobby Lashley ends up coming out and taking MVP's place, giving him the night off, and Bobby Lashley makes short work of R-Truth. We'll see more on Raw that this had a purpose, but I mean, it was short and sweet and forgettable. It was fine.
Yeah, it felt like, and we saw this on Raw as well, it feels like there's a real rehabilitation process going on with Lashley right now. I mentioned many times, really dating back to last summer, that he could be a contender to Brock Lesnar or a title contender, and it feels like that's the goal with him right now. He came out, told MVP he could take the night off. Then R-Truth, he wanted to take the night off as well. He wanted to leave the ring. Lashley wouldn't allow him to. It was a short match. I thought it was very respectable. I thought Lashley looked devastating. That spear looked absolutely awesome. The spear he used for the pin. And let's just give Truth. I mean, the guy, I think he's 50 this year, if he's not 50 already. I think he's born in 1970, R-Truth, so he's about a year younger than me. And, I mean, he still looks amazing. You never believe that guy was that old, would you?
Yeah, well, so I just checked, he was born on January 19th, 1972, so he's 48. For 48, Jesus Christ.
Sorry, I did mean to say 1970, not 1950. 1970.
He's 70 years old.
Maths was never my strong point. But no, you know, so he was born in 72, so he's 48, right? Okay. Thank you for correcting me there, Kenny.
That's what I'm here to do, just in case there's any error, I'm here just to... No. But yeah, he's all but 50, and he looks great for it. You would never... If you didn't know, you would think that he... If somebody said that he was 40 or even 39, 38, you wouldn't probably question it if you didn't know his history.
No, definitely not. And you know, in this enhancement role here, he's playing, obviously, a comedy character... you know, this is his role now. He's clearly happy playing it. And he served a valuable purpose here. He put Lashley over, and he's getting Lashley ready for a run, presumably, at Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, you would think that's where it's going. And it makes sense. Finally, he's going to get this big match, and I think he'd be a good competitor for Drew. Yes. We then got Bayley versus Tamina for the SmackDown Women's Championship. I mean, we all knew this was going to be your match of the night, Finn. Tamina has got a special place in your heart. I thought Bayley had some good character work here. Tamina was absolutely dreadful, so Bayley tried to work around her. But I said this to Sandra on the Patreon review, and I mean this in a positive way. I thought this was okay, and that's about the highest praise that I could ever give a Tamina match.
Yeah, I mean, there was prior to the match, Bayley and Sasha Banks, they were backstage and they were interviewed by Kayla, wasn't it?
Kayla Braxton.
Yeah, and Kayla asked Sasha Banks a question, and before Sasha could answer, Bayley dived in and cut Sasha. And then Kayla's like, well, you know, Sasha probably would have liked to answer the question by herself. So, I mean, that was really furthering the tension between those two. And yet, this match here at the end, they were still solid, Kenny. I mean, it was Sasha who really helped Bayley with a distraction retain the title. Sasha had, after Tamina had hit the super kick and the Samoan drop combo, which she used to pin Bayley on SmackDown. So she used that again here. And it appeared that she had Bayley beat, but Sasha. She sort of climbed into the ring. Tamina stopped dead in the tracks. Then she pursued Sasha. And that was quite funny. I don't know if Sasha was going too fast or Tamina was going too slow. People can decide for themselves. But I think Tamina was supposed to catch Sasha a little bit sooner than she did. So Sasha had to kind of stop. That was probably the highlight of the match for me. sort of like a distraction there. And then... Bayley attacked Tamina from behind. Tamina again went for the Samoan drop. Bayley turned it into a crucifix and scored the 1-2-3 there. I mean, the finish move looked a bit ropey. It wasn't exactly Smith-like. You know, it was a move that he frequently used, wasn't it, the crucifix? And then afterwards, Sasha ran in. She kneed Tamina, nailed Tamina, and then presented Bayley with the SmackDown Women's title belt. So when it all ended, it appeared that Sasha and Bayley were pals again. But there's some tension there brewing. You know, we know there's splits coming, but they're playing the long game here, obviously.
The long game is the way to go. And yeah, I mean, this is working. It's making Bayley a far better character than we have. Because we've in the past, we've talked about how Bayley's not been clicking as a character with us for a while. And yeah. I think that now that she's got... Now that she's sinking her teeth into something, it's working. So, good on her.
Definitely. This felt like it was really more about Bayley and Sasha than Bayley and Tamina, to me. And, you know, Tamina, as you say, she's really kind of average in the ring. I mean, and that's putting it politely. But she was there...
that's the politest thing you've ever said.
But she was there to put Bayley over, and she was a part of this jigsaw puzzle, wasn't she? That when it's completed, it's going to be Sasha and Bayley don't like each other. That's going to be the picture that we're getting to, but we're not there yet.
We are not there yet. The next match divides opinion. A lot of people hated it. Some people loved the story of it. I'm curious what you thought, Finn. It was Braun Strowman defending the Universal Championship against Bray Wyatt. It was Firefly Funhouse Bray. We have the Black Sheep Mask involved. And Bray ends up being sort of made to think that Braun is rejoining the cult. But of course, he doesn't after Ramblin' Rabbit appears and tells him to snap out of it, and Wyatt is power slammed and pinned. Braun Strowman retains, and we get Wyatt afterwards is saying that he's not happy. We see the Fiend face appearing on the screen. So what did you think of it? This was more of a story thing to build to the big Strowman Fiend match rather than this being a big blow-off match itself. How did it work for you? Talk me through your thoughts.
Yeah, I thought it worked really well. I mean, this was sort of what I was expecting from this match. I mean, it was unthinkable that Braun would lose the title. I wasn't sure. I was kind of almost thinking they were going to do like a screwy finish, but at least we got a finish here. And Bray Wyatt's a character who can do the job without really doing any harm to that character. The Fiend, on the other hand, well, that's so with Bill Goldberg some time back. I thought this was well done. You know, there was a lot of. It was more about advancing the story than really having the match. Braun kicked out his sister Abigail. I thought Wyatt really sold that well. He was sure Braun would kick out. Then Wyatt was going to go for a second sister Abigail. But because he wants Braun to come back to the family, wants to reconcile Braun, or at least he did while his match was in progress, he hesitated before he hit sister Abigail again. And that gave Braun time to counter with a choke slam. There's like another comeback by Bray. Braun ends up at ringside, puts the black sheep's mask on, comes back into the ring. Bray thinks that Braun's seen the light and that he's decided to come back home to the waiting arms of the Wyatts. Braun did the like an arms wide pose, fell to his knees, you know. It seemed like it was all back on again. Bray couldn't believe it. Of course, it was a ruse. The Funhouse puppets are at ringside. They're chiming in. But then Braun removed the mask. Bray didn't really know what to make of it. He's kind of like paralyzed in terror. You know, his dreams have been shattered by, Braun's betrayal. So Braun removes the mask, smashes Bray with power slam for the 1-2-3. So I thought it was well done as a story protracting device. I mean, this is what it was all about, extending or advancing this storyline. I don't think Bray was harmed by this. And I think, I don't know whether it really makes Braun that much more interesting, but he's certainly a lot more interesting than he was at the start of the year, because there's more to the character now than there was prior to him becoming Universal Champion.
Do you think on this week's SmackDown, especially with the build, which we assume will be to Backlash on June the 14th for the Fiend and Strowman, do you think it would be a good idea, I certainly think they should, to sort of bring in the idea that, you know, the Fiend lost to Goldberg and Braun Strowman beat Goldberg, with the idea that, you know, Braun could beat the Fiend because he's done the thing that the Fiend couldn't do? Is that something they should bring into the story? Should they ignore it completely? What would you do?
Well, I mean, they might as well. I don't think it really matters now. It all can be explained anyway by Bray Wyatt in the Funhouse. I think the Firefly Funhouse match at WrestleMania did do a lot to undo the damage inflicted upon Bray / the Fiend by Goldberg at the Saudi event at the end of Feb. So, I think it's by all means, bring it up. It does seem like ancient history now. It doesn't really seem relevant anymore to even bring that up. Obviously, it was big news at the time. We talked about it in depth, but it doesn't really feel like it matters so much now. Anything really to really make the next match more interesting. But I thought this was everything they've been doing just sort of feels like the start of a bigger story and a more interesting story. And I think this, I don't know, some people probably would disagree with this, but I think this match has made me more interested in a rematch between Braun, or rather a match between Braun and the Fiend. I'm more interested in a match between Braun and the Fiend than I prior to this. So I think they've done a good job setting up that next logical chapter of this saga, which is that Braun has defeated Bray Wyatt, but can he defeat the Fiend? And yes, of course, by all means, bring it up that he defeated Goldberg handily at WrestleMania, and it was Goldberg who decisively defeated the Fiend Super Showdown. So yeah, by all means, work that in.
Then we got Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins for the WWE Championship. Drew McIntyre retained, as most people thought he would, but we saw Seth Rollins debut new music. Drew got the big win in about 20 minutes. What did you make of the match? And was this a... Did this feel like a big win for Drew?
I think it did. I thought was really... I thought it was a sterling effort by both. I thought it was a really credible match that built and built, and with the with an audience that was, you know, with an atmosphere, with an audience that was behind it, this would have felt like a pretty mega match, I think. I mean, it was the right outcome with McIntyre retaining. Obviously, it's nowhere near time for him to lose that title. He needs to retain it until. And I would have said maybe longer, to really try and establish him as this, you know, long-term champ and somebody who can be champion again. The Kofi title reign, people say, well, it wasn't that bad. Well, actually it was, because how much demand is there for Kofi to become champion again, Kenny? There isn't really any, is there?
Yeah, no, it kind of feels like that ship's been and gone.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think if you're somebody who's a real, really title contender, a real title caliber material, and you've had a reign and you lose that title, then there should be really demand from the public for you to be inserted into another title run and potentially become champion again. And I don't feel that at all about Kofi. So McIntyre needs time to really establish himself as a genuine title player, genuine champion who can be a multiple champion in years to come. But yeah, I really enjoyed this match. I thought it was very well done. It was quite interesting at the end that McIntyre offered Rollins a handshake and Seth accepted it. So, I mean, that was something that I didn't see coming. So that was quite interesting as well, and played into what happened on Raw the next. Well, he did actually have the story continued Raw the following night, didn't it, with Seth Rollins, as we will get to momentarily.
Indeed, indeed. So then we got the main event, which was the cinematic ladder matches taking place, at the same time. The women, Shayna Baszler, Nia Jax, Asuka, Dana Brooke, Lacey Evans and Carmella started on the ground floor of the Titan Tower. And then Daniel Bryan, Rey Mysterio, Aleister Black, AJ Styles, King Corbin and Otis started in the gym, which I think is on the second or third floor. So this match was just absolutely full of shenanigans, cameos, comedy moments, which led us in the end to see Asuka lifting the women's Money in the Bank briefcase, and Otis, that's not a typo there, Otis winning the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. What did you make of the match? I mean, there was a lot of comedy in it, there was a lot of kind of attempts at humour in it. Did it work? Talk about the two winners and if they were the right choice.
I thought the matches worked. I mean, we were curious as to how this would play out, and by starting the matches in different parts of WWE World HQ, that was the way to do it. I mean, the two groups, the men and the women, in a room where Paul Heyman was sat in front of a banquet. He was sat in front of enough food to feed 10 people. Was the implication that all that was for Paul Heyman, do you think, Kenny?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I did love that they had, you know, they had this big banquet of food and they had it all laid out. And then when the women came in from one side and the men came in from the other, it had all been orchestrated for Paul to shout, "Ladies and gentlemen!" I really admire when you do a lot of setup to get to a joke. Like that pops me. So I mean, but I do have to ask you: is Dana Brooke the stupidest human alive? Because she somehow thought that when she lifted the Money in the Bank briefcase in the conference room, that she had somehow won. I need to question if Dana Brooke really watches this show.
Yeah, that was a strange development, wasn't it? I mean, I think maybe she thought that the money inside the, because it was transparent, wasn't it? Maybe she thought the money was real. I mean, what
so
would
she thought this was like a bonus, right? Like she was getting money on top of getting the briefcase later on.
Well, what would have been really funny would have been if Dana had just sort of said, "Oh yeah, that's a good point, Stephanie." And then when Stephanie had left the room and everyone else had run off, Dana could have then like opened, looked at the money, shut the case, and then ran off. And then we could have seen her outside driving off in a car. Now, that would have been humorous.
But unfortunately, she is just, as you'd say in Scotland, she's a dafty.
I mean, Dana could have been sending him, even though we have a lockdown and everything like that. Dana could like photos in postcards in or virtual posts in, obviously postcards, posts from in, on Instagram and everything from places around the world. He could have worked in some how is Dana getting to these places? You know, when there's a travel ban on, I don't know. That's just something silly. But I think that would have been really funny. Had she done, had she thought that that was real money.
Well, she plays up comedy pretty well. You know, I think that she, as much as she would probably want to be a serious competitor, she's proven in the past when she was in Titus Worldwide being the mathematician.
That's right.
Or the statistician, sorry. She was the statistician that she can do it. What cameo did you prefer, John Laurinaitis or Brother Love?
Oh, well, John Laurinaitis. I mean, the Brother Love one was, I mean, that was just rather boring, wasn't it? Him coming out of the toilet. I mean, we had to have the, you know, it's toilet humour. Vince's preferred form of humour is toilet humour. So we had to have Brother Love coming out of the toilet. I mean, it would have been really funny if someone had used John Laurinaitis's electric vehicle to drive down one of the corridors. That would have been really funny. Had someone done that. I'm not sure if Otis would have fit in the seat, but someone else could have commandeered that vehicle.
But
instead we just had like, you know, the cream pie to the face shot in custard pie to the face or whatever it was from Otis to John Laurinaitis. So there's Vince. Vince was the best cameo, really, wasn't he?
Him shouting out to Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles, and using hand sanitizer was like the best double troll moment of all time. Like, he just, you know, everybody thinks that Vince doesn't give a shit about anybody. So the first thing he's doing when these guys are even in the room is sanitizing himself. And then, you know, he's got these two internet darlings who are like the technical wrestlers, and he's just telling them to get out. And like, I can just imagine the people who were pitched it to Vince going, this would be really funny. Because, like, this is what people think of you. So just do this. And he hammed it up. Also, Vince looks so old, right?
Yeah.
My God.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you go back to that angle that he did with Kevin Owens, when Kevin Owens headbutted him, I thought he really looked it then. And his voice is going as well a bit. So, yeah, I mean, he does. Hey, you know, but it happens to us all, Kenny. We all get older.
Doesn't happen to me. I've got a skincare range. See, that?
You told me about that. Is it Irish whiskey or Scottish whiskey or American bourbon? Some type of whiskey in it.
It just says whiskey. But look, my complexion's a little bit better. I've also got some blemish cream that I have to use now. I've got a chemical peel. I'm sorted. Vince just needs to take better care of his skin and his face.
Well, we can't look, Kenny, because this is a podcast. It's just audio. But I mean, Vince, he just needs to give you a call. He needs to say,
I'm available. I'm footloose.
Beauty tips with Kenny.
It's lockdown. I've got fuck all else to do, Vince. Let's get on Zoom.
Get back to the match. Yeah, they started in the gym, did the men. That was really funny. I mean, Corbin ended up throwing this weight plate and the person ducked and it smashed the mirror and put a massive dent in the wall. I just thought, my God, that's going to take some fixing. I'm glad that's not my responsibility. And, you know, Asuka was really funny at the start when she's there on like the balcony and jumps off and all the other women, then runs into the elevator and, you know, gets a head start on everyone. So, I mean, that was really funny. I mean, Otis trapped Styles under a massive great barbell, but I was quite amused. I can't really explain why Doink had a cameo. That's the one I can't explain.
Well, I mean, he also didn't, wasn't, it was like the Doink music, but he in no way looked like Doink. I needed the Doink gear. I mean, Brother Love went full gear, so did John Laurinaitis. Doink's no exception.
Absolutely. It was quite amusing when AJ Styles escaped from the barbell, went looking for Rey Mysterio and happened upon a large picture of The Undertaker, then there's a coffin in there and Aleister Black threw him in there and AJ's having flashbacks to the Boneyard match. So I thought that was quite funny. I thought I did amuse that. I did find that amusing. And then from there, both the men and the women, they ended up in the room where there's this huge banquet with food, as I say, for 10 people. And then Otis yelled, food fight, which was a homage, of course, to John Belushi's character in I'm sure you knew that, Kenny.
Yeah, Animal House. It was a good callback. I don't know if everybody would have got it, because some people maybe haven't seen John Belushi stuff, but I got it. And then we got to the top of the we got to the roof, and Baron Corbin committed 2 attempted murders on Rey Mysterio and Aleister Black. So that was nice.
Yeah.
But then Asuka ends up taking the women's briefcase. I was really happy to see Asuka get it, because I just thought that she's worked so hard, in spite of sometimes not being presented as, you know, a top character on the show, that I felt like a kind of nice warm feeling that she'd won it. What did you make of her being the choice here? I know that, because before you were probably not keen on Asuka being the choice.
I think Nia Jax was my prediction. Really, to me, if it was Nia or Asuka, I think I was going to... I mean, those were the two most worthy contenders to win it. Obviously, with what happened on Raw the next night, it all made sense that Asuka won when you think about an Asuka and Nia Jax match, can't they? I mean, there's all sorts of other things they can do. So, I was fine with the outcome. Think of the other contenders. I mean, you know, Lacey Evans really... I mean, she's to me, she's not championship material. Shayna Baszler's coming off as a crushing defeat at WrestleMania. I thought they actually did quite a good job starting to rebuild her on Raw. We'll get to that when we cover Raw. Carmella, I mean, there's no way she should win it again. Dana Brooke, I mean, she's not really a Money in the Bank briefcase winning caliber performer either. So, I mean, that leaves you with Asuka and Nia Jax. So, either of those I would have been fine with.
And then, obviously, after Asuka won, we had Otis being the choice of the men's. I mean, the question, I guess, is going to be... People are not going to buy Otis as being a world champion right now or anything like that. No. But, like, is it good to give the Money in the Bank briefcase, especially in an empty arena era, to a guy who you probably can do some fun vignette stuff with, and, you know, maybe it can go into a tag title thing with him and Tucker? Like, there's various ways they can go with it. Is that more exciting than giving the briefcase to, like, an AJ or a Brian or somebody who's kind of a safe choice?
It was unexpected. I suppose, really, given the circumstances we're all labouring under at the moment, I mean, I said right at the start of this lockdown that they needed to experiment and try some different things. So for me to say, oh, this was a big mistake, you know, that would be the height of hypocrisy, really. Wouldn't be the first time that I've been a hypocrite on this podcast, but I try not to be. It's something different. I don't think many of us really saw it coming, but until this whole thing starts firing up again with fans present, we're kind of in this sort of holding pattern with wrestling. There's not a massive amount really happening or really can happen. So I don't really think it does that much harm making Otis the briefcase contract holder. You can further the storyline with Mandy. You know, that's obviously something that they're really high on at the moment. And quite interesting, really, Kenny, because remember when we did the emergency podcast and all the layoffs, and one of the writers who was axed, she was the one who was credited with writing most of the Mandy and Otis material for the Mandy and Otis storyline. And we wondered what would happen that after she was fired from the job, and it's actually gone from strength to strength, hasn't it? Amazingly.
Yeah, they're going with it, and you can see. I mean, even when you look online, and you shouldn't take online as the only barometer of success, but like the people are really into this Otis and Mandy storyline with Sonya, and I think there's no reason to not kind of keep it going. And do you know what, like, I would never have picked Otis to be the guy. In fact, I'm sure I said last week, like, well, he's not going to be the guy. But, or maybe I said it was Sandra, but when he won it, I was kind of going, do you know what? I'm willing to go with it, because I think he could do a lot with that. And he's someone who, I think there's a lot of comedy you can do with it. There's a lot of different areas you can go with where he cashes it in. How do him and Tucker run out one day to cash it? Does he run out on his own sometimes to try and cash it? Like, there's various ways you can go with it. And I think you're right. I think it's going from strength to strength. So,
It is hard to envisage him as champion, but I mean, it doesn't really matter as long as they play it properly. And I think it's kind of in a sense, it is a shame for Otis and Mandy, because I think had if there were crowds present at these shows, I think this would be super over. I think these two would be fans would be so into this storyline and this journey that they're on. So, I mean, I'm enjoying it as it is, but if crowds were in the stands, fans were in attendance, I just think it would be even better than it is, because I think this would be something that would really strike a chord with the public, as you say, in the way it is online, even though obviously that's not the only barometer of success, although it is a big one at the moment, Kenny, because no one's in the arenas.
Yeah, for sure. So overall, Money in the Bank, thumbs up show, thumbs in the middle. Did it exceed expectations? Was it what you expected it to be?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. I mean, I thought it was as good as it was going to be. I mean, I actually felt like the Money in the Bank matches could have been a little bit longer. No doubt there's loads of extra footage that they shot and they didn't use. I mean, it's very, you can see it's very tightly edited. So, but sometimes, you know, less is more. That's something that I've been preaching for a while. So, I mean, maybe they did the right thing, limiting it to the length of time that it was. You know, you didn't really want it to overstay its welcome. But there was, yeah, it was a lot of fun. The Money in the Bank matches were heaps of fun. Really enjoyed them. And I thought Rollins and McIntyre was as well. I mean, in fact, really, there was nothing on the show that I didn't like. I think everything really did serve its purpose. So, I mean, overall, if we're going to give it a thumbs, the direction of the thumbs, it's got to be a thumbs up. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, I thought it was a thumbs up show. I thought that they did a good job pacing it, and it got to the main event, which was the most hyped match going into it. So, now we are going to talk about Raw in a second, but before we do, just to kind of, you know, make a little sandwich here, there's a news story going around which I thought was worth bringing up here. So interestingly, Sting, WWE Hall of Famer Sting, who had his run in WWE obviously as well, he was due to have an action figure released on for pre-order on Sunday through Mattel, and the figure was mysteriously canned. It's been scrapped, and Mattel had released a statement that I think a few places have put out saying, you know, due to circumstances beyond our control, the figure will no longer be released. And if we ever get the chance to work with him again, we'll bring the figure out. In response to, I think it was the Major Wrestling Figure podcast, Cody had sent a reply doing the kind of ear cup as if to say, what's that? 4 days ago, Sting tweeted out saying, good to see Jake the Snake healthy and back on national TV in a prominent role, one of the all-time great heels, and had a gif of him and Jake from back in WCW 1992.
It was the famous spin the wheel, make the deal video, wasn't it, with the eyes lighting up?
Yes, that's the one.
Halloween
92. And he's even been interacting with Lance Archer on social media, when Archer had been asked if there was anybody he wanted to step in the ring with, past and present, he said, always wanted to step in the ring with Sting, and Sting retweeted it saying, just glad to see you getting a much-deserved shot in AEW. So based on all that, are people reading too much into it, Finn, that Sting might be going to AEW to have some sort of like Legends role? And if he did go, do you think there's a role for him there? So first of all, do you think people are jumping to conclusions? Second of all, if it's true, do you think there is a role for him?
Well, I mean, if you were going to bring Sting in, I would just bring him in for one appearance on a pay-per-view. So maybe they are setting something like that up. I don't know. And they could do something with Sting and Jake Roberts. But I mean, as far as Sting in as a regular character, he doesn't need the money. You know, he's doing very well for himself. I don't think he needs wrestling anymore either. I think he still likes pro wrestling, but I can't see him coming back and doing a regular role. I just don't think he would do that at this stage in his life. But as far as a one-off appearance, I think that would work tremendous. I think it would work really well. And they could even set that up with Jay Roberts. I mean, I don't really care who they set it up with, but I think as a one-off appearance, then yeah, I think Sting would be very valuable to AEW. But as far as bringing him in on a regular basis, they don't really need it. Timers. I mean, they've got Tully Blanchard, they've got Arn Anderson, they've got Jake Roberts, as you said. If you start bringing too many old timers in, and you know, the novelty very quickly wears off and they lose their value. But as a one-off appearance, yeah, I'm all for that. Absolutely. What do you think?
I think a one-off appearance could be really good. I think Sting and Jake as the kind of two guys on the outside would be superb, and you could see Sting sort of, you know, knocking Jake Roberts out. The thing that makes me think that there is maybe something in Sting as a regular character is that I loved the Joker character of Sting in TNA.
Yeah.
Like, I just thought he was so great in that role. So if he was to find a role where he wasn't just being Sting, the WCW legend, and he was being, like, the Joker character, I would be all for that. I think he could do great with that. But I don't know how you introduce that. I don't know if kind of legally he's allowed to do a character like that because of it, doing it in TNA. But I certainly think if he was to do something wacky like that, that's... And that run was... When was that run? 2013 to 2015? Something like that? 2014?
I think it was slightly earlier than that. I think it was 2011 time, I believe. Okay. 2012.
But he was older. He was a riot in that role. So I hope that they do something like that with him. If they're going to do some regular, I don't think it's a coincidence. I think the fact that Mattel have pulled it right is because if they've put that up for pre-order, you've got to imagine like it's already started production.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So you would not stop production of a figure unless you contractually just could no longer do it. So
or were told.
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody who might be grudge bearing or resentful or. I'm not naming any names. I mean, I'm not putting any fingers in any directions. But I mean, you know, these things don't just happen. As you say, people will have pre-ordered, so now presumably some of these people will have to be offered refunds, which is a load of work. And it's like, well, why would you do this? And there's only really one reason why this would happen, and it's the reason that everyone is right now. I don't need to say it out loud. There's only one reason why this is happening. Just one more thing about Sting, Kenny. He can't wrestle again. So bring a regular character, what's he going to do? He's not going to wrestle again.
He would need to be a second for someone. It would need to be a Jake type role rather than a wrestling role.
But as a one-off appearance, but the reason I brought up his wealth, I mean, he's got lots of property, is that it probably would cost you a lot of money to bring him in because he doesn't need the money. So as a one-off appearance, I can imagine that he probably would do that at a rate he could afford. But as something that was on a regular basis, I think he would charge a lot of money because, I mean, why wouldn't he? And would it really be worth it with loads of other legends in the company? I just don't think it would be, but I'd love to see him in there once.
So let's talk about, before we talk about what actually happened on Raw, leading up to, we were the news broke by Pro Wrestling Sheet that Becky Lynch was going to deliver an address on Raw and make a major career announcement. So she would she comes out at the beginning of the show and she has the Money in the Bank briefcase. And she basically says, you know, she came here years ago, she didn't have any friends, she's built a career here, the fans have always been behind her. And then Asuka comes out and she basically says, you know, what you don't know is that I spoke to the higher-ups and the match that you wrestled last night was not for the Money in the Bank briefcase, it was for what's inside it. There was a combination lock, she opened it was the Raw Women's title. Asuka does maybe my favourite celebration ever. And the fact that she's now the Raw Women's Champion, and then Becky says, "I'm really happy for you. Go be a warrior. I'm gonna go be a mother." So Becky was announced she was pregnant. Obviously Seth Rollins, and Asuka's now the new Raw Women's Champion. What do you make of the news and how they explained it and played it out on TV?
Well, it was a bit. What I found amusing was we saw Seth Rollins. A catatonic state, and I'm thinking, well, is this connected to the announcement that Becky Lynch is pregnant?
He's thinking about he's got to raise a kid.
It's just too much for him, you know. On the heels of that devastating loss to Drew McIntyre, then finding out that he's going to, I mean, no wonder he's in a catatonic state. So, well, I mean, it was very well done. Was the segment in which Lynch announced it? You know, it was. Emotional thing for her because she could see that she's trying to work out, is this it for her in wrestling? You know, she no doubt, if she wants to, I'm sure she can wrestle again, but would WWE give her the chance to become like a full-time player again, or would she want to be a full-time player again? It's really hard. You can say, well, Lacey Evans is a full-time player and, you know, she's got a daughter, but Lacey Evans has never been to the top of the mountain. Becky Lynch has. So that kind of changes the expectation and the ambition that WWE might have for Becky Lynch if she would if she were to return as a wrestler. You know, she's already done, she's already gone higher than she ever will again. Even if she was continuing to wrestle, she wasn't pregnant right now, she's not going to top what she did in 2019. It's just not going to happen. Whereas I guess the feeling is that Lacey Evans might become a star in the future. So yeah, it was obviously a very emotional time for her because she's kind of saying goodbye to pro wrestling, this thing that she's been doing for so many years and that had become her life essentially until this change in her life. So yeah, I think it was very beautifully done, Kenny. It was almost hard to believe that this took place on a WWE show. It was so subtly done, and you know, I think backstage all the performers were congratulating her. Later in the show we saw her hugging Vince McMahon. Yeah, it was so wonderfully done, really, and it was really the biggest story of the show. They went back to it, I think, at least twice. Yeah, at least twice they reminded us of what she'd announced in the opening segment. So yeah, they really I think they really gave her the red carpet, the Rolls Royce treatment here, Kenny. That's my take on it. What do you think?
Yeah, no, it was great. It was such a feel good moment, and I think what worked as well is that it was so well kind of timed by the fact that, like, Asuka's the one person who had beat Becky Lynch. Then they had the series of matches. Asuka's been someone who we've raved about for so long, and the fact that she's stepping away from her spot. And, you know, in the story, sort of Asuka's taking that spot right now. That's a great link. That's a great thing to happen. And, you know, Asuka deserves it. She's been one of the stars of the Empty Arena era. And, you know, her them hugging and all that kind of stuff. It was really heartfelt. It felt very organic. I would really urge Natalia to study this for just some semblance of genuism at some point in her career. You know, it's just a wee tip for Natty. But no, it was great. It was a tremendous segment. And the thing is, you know, for her, the impossible thing is for Becky Lynch. Apparently, she's due in December, but the impossible thing for her is going to be to know whether she's going to want to come back.
Well, absolutely,
because, you know, we will never know what it's like to become a mother, like a maternal mother. And know what that would be like to, because I assume that you can think all the things you want before it, but once you have the baby, like, that, everything could change, you know?
Sure.
But whatever I would like to think she would come back, but at the same time, she has done everything, and she got to the top of the mountain, and she beat everybody, so there's not really much else for her to do. So if she comes back, you know, what's next for her? But at the same time, she loves wrestling, so she probably will want to come back. And I think that they'll be very... I think there's no better time for... Because, I mean, this is a weird thing. Have we ever had a top female star in pro wrestling who is champion leave to have a baby?
Well, not in the modern era, of course not, because...
Because Trish had her kids afterwards.
Yes, absolutely.
Mickie James had hers when she was in TNA or kind of around at that point. So, but she, you know, she was off when she had the kids. So this is, I think there's no better time for a woman to be able to sort of say, you know, I'm going to go and have my kid and that's what I'm going to do. And they'll take care of it, I'm sure. And then afterwards she can come back if she chooses to come back. I feel like this is the best time for that to be sort of an acceptable thing to do in a big mainstream wrestling company. So I'm just glad for her as well that they've, you know, she's someone who helped them get to that point, so she deserves to kind of reap those rewards.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, of course she is. Yeah, I mean, she's done very well financially out of WWE over the last few years, so she's in a really good position in life, so good for her. And I'm quite sure that if she does want to come back, then she will be able to come back. Whether she'll want to or not is another matter. And if she did, would it be full-time? Probably not. And wrestling WWE will move on over the next year because that's the way it is. So, I mean, I'm sure that she will be part of, if she would like to, big shows in future, but she's not going to be the person she was from 2018 to 2019. But there again, she's already been that person. So why would she want to do that again?
And she The thing that makes me think that she will come back is that I don't think that somebody who's put their life into pro wrestling like she has would not come back to be in front of fans again, to wrestle in front of fans again and experience that. And also, you know, she's in a position where I would almost bet money on the idea that WWE would be like, look, if we can only have you back a few shows a year, so be it. That's fine. We'll take it. I think she's in a good spot to basically pick what she wants to do and how often she wants to do it. So, good.
Yeah,
for her.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's absolutely up to her, and she's in a position in life. And yeah, congrats to her and Mr. Rollins.
So elsewhere on Raw, we also had Drew McIntyre taking on Andrade in a non-title match, pretty fun match, which Drew won, and then post-match he ended up basically challenging Baron Corbin. We should mention that as a kind of response to the ratings last week or two, WWE have now announced that there's going to be limited brand interaction through invitation. What a weird way to word it. And that will, you know, it will start. I understand, by the way, the people who are going to be like, they're starting it with Drew McIntyre and Baron Corbin. The thing to bear in mind is that at least that's just the TV match. It's just a Corbin comes over to TV, Drew beats him. This isn't going to be like this is his next big feud. But what did you make of Drew getting the big win and then his challenge to Corbin?
Prior to this, there'd been tension between Angel Garza and Austin Theory, and then Drew wiped out Theory and Garza, and then that led to McIntyre versus Andrade. Just feels like Andrade has become just another guy again. I mean, this is a person who has been the victim of the stop-start booking many times now. I don't know how many times he has been the victim of this, but it just feels like he's going somewhere and that was seriously. And then normal service resumes and he's kind of just another guy who's putting other people over. I mean, it's easy to forget that he's a US champ, isn't it?
I'd forgotten until I saw him on Raw with the belt.
Yeah, I mean, it's so easy to do that. So it just feels a bit short-sighted to me to have Andrade losing a match that really didn't matter to Drew McIntyre. Okay, it was a proficient match, but I mean, wasn't really memorable. It's not going to mean anything to either man's career this time next week. So, I mean, I really want to see Andrade in this position again. Probably his push will start again in a few weeks, and then maybe in 3 or 4 weeks after that, it'll dim again. You know, his push will abate. It will decelerate. And it's just like, yeah, so and then afterwards, Drew talked about the brand-to-brand invitation. And he really built up his opponent on next week's show, didn't he? He really built it up, and then it was King Corbin.
Do you know what? When he started talking, I just knew it was going to be Corbin. I just had this feeling deep in my ether that it was going to be King Corbin.
I mean, what a letdown. I mean, really, so I mean, you know, bless him, WWE is this, you know, it's like King Corbin is like the antithesis to Andrade. You know, they never lose faith in Corbin, do they? You know, even when
never.
He's in a feud with Elias, which is kind of a bit of a preliminary feud, he'd still got tons of TV time and tons of creative attention. And Corbin's back again. You know, next week he's going to be in a match with Drew McIntyre, which you can't imagine, they've kind of have built it up. You would think that maybe it's going to be the start of a program that's going to last a few weeks. I can't imagine that Drew's just going to score the pin in their first match. Surely not. But
let me live in blind hope, okay?
Then it'll be like one and done, and that'll be it.
That's it. That's all I want. Just Claymore kick him, send him back to SmackDown.
Yeah, so it was. I'm not excited about that match next week, Kenny, if I'm honest. Bobby Lashley again. He's been prepared for a title shot. He had a really bit of a push here on the show, and then we had an appearance. Then we had an appearance from Lana, Kenny, backstage.
Well, so Bobby Lashley beats Humberto Carrillo, and then he ends up after MVP basically says, you know, if you ever want some help, let me know. And then Lashley comes out to help MVP during a six-man tag with Ricochet, Cedric Alexander, and R-Truth against MVP, Brendan Vink, and Shane Thorne, and Lashley ended up coming out and spearing R-Truth, and basically they're together. The thing that struck me here was that Lana, after MVP had spoken to Lashley backstage and said, you know, if you ever want to get some help, gain some traction, let me know. He walked up to Lana, MVP, and basically explained it to her, and she just did the most basic Amdram screaming I've ever seen. Like, if you're ever going to argue that Lana is a good performer, this is not the way to do it. She just, when she performed here, I was just like, get Lashley away from her as soon as you can. Because it was just, I mean, can you imagine watching, like, you could imagine watching the MVP and Lashley promo and somebody who you know walks in, they don't watch wrestling. And, you know, you just go, okay, that's just two guys, two fighters, they're talking about whatever. And then you see Lana do her thing and you just have to kind of defend it. But, oh yeah, well, she's just a screamy person on the show. It just makes no sense. She was terrible here.
Oh, she was, yeah. Yeah, indefensible. I mean, she must have spent ages getting well, and she was only on TV for, what, 15 seconds? Maybe a little bit longer than that, wasn't it? But she didn't take up too much screen time, and I think we should all be grateful for that.
I certainly was.
What else was on the show?
We saw the Iconics. The Iconics returned.
They returned. It was a moment of bliss for Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross, who presumably had received as women's tag team champions.
You can go in any brand.
They can go in any brand. We haven't seen them on Raw for a little while. But yeah, they are entitled to wrestle on any brand. So they were on a moment of bliss. Peyton Royce and Billy Kay returned. They wanted a match, but Bliss and Cross said, no, you're not having a title match. It doesn't work like that. So it ended up being a non-title match. Pinning Alexa to score the win in this non-title match, which presumably will lead to a title match maybe at Backlash or maybe
next week on Raw. The beating the champions in a non-title match is lazy, but, you know, at least they did it. I had to cackle to myself at the beginning, at the top of the show. They were like, you know, Edge is back tonight with Randy Orton and Rey Mysterio and Aleister Black. When they were thrown off Titan Tower, they actually landed on a secondary floor and they've been cleared for competition. You're like, okay, sure. They're not dead.
Rey Mysterio, when he was being interviewed backstage, he said, I feel great.
Way to sell it, Ray.
I feel great. It's like, there was a secondary roof 6 feet lower than the one from which I was hurled. And it's like, well, if you were flown like 6 feet and didn't land on a massive crash mat, which obviously you did, but let's just say there wasn't a massive crash mat there, I don't think you'd be wrestling the next night, would you?
I've got to feel like the idea of how Rey Mysterio felt after falling off onto a secondary roof is how you felt the day after your Jaeger bombs, Finn. And I just don't think you would have been saying you feel great. In fact, you text me saying evidence to the contrary.
Quite right. In fact, I was still feeling pretty ropey on the Monday. So 2 days later, well, that is the Jaeger bomb effect, and it's why that will never pass my lips again.
So but, he says. You retired once, I believe that.
But yeah, Ray's like, it's just a total no sell. He might as well have been John Cena there, you know, for all the selling that he did.
Well, he didn't feel great later on because during the tag match with him and Aleister Black against Seth Rollins and Buddy Murphy, Rollins ended up just battering him, and then they would be on the outside and he was like jabbing his eye into the corner of the ring steps and Mysterio was bleeding, apparently. And, you know, the thing is, Becky Lynch, if this is what Seth Rollins responds to fatherhood like, you know, I'd be reconsidering my options.
Yeah, I mean, given Seth's track record, yeah, probably best not to say anything. I don't have anything to say, but I'm not going to say them. So they ended up having a match, didn't they? It was Seth Rollins and Murphy against Rey Mysterio and Aleister Black, who also was as fit as a fiddle, good as new, survived the fall, no ill effects. And Seth Rollins is stood the... Oh, actually, we should just backtrack. As Rey Mysterio was there being interviewed and he's telling us that he feels great, Seth Rollins walked into the frame. You know, he's got that dragged through a hedge backwards look with his hair. I mean, he's there in this sort of trance, this catatonic state. And Ray said to him, "Congratulations. Being a father genuinely changes your life." And then Ray just sort of walked off in a trance. Sorry, Seth walked off in a trance. We were introduced to the new version of Seth in that segment. And then later in the match, Seth walked out, teamed with Murphy, against Mysterio and Aleister Black. And Rollins is stood on the ring apron, motionless. He's just not moving. I mean, what a performance, Kenny. He just stayed in exactly the same place and didn't move at all.
It's like Daniel Day-Lewis had entered the arena at the Performance Center.
I mean, fantastic. I don't even think he blinked in all that time. And Rey Mysterio ended up inadvertently, I believe, or possibly intentionally ended up elbowing Seth in the stomach. Seth fell off the ring apron. Then Seth attacked Rey without digging in. The DQ was called. And then Seth destroyed Ray outside the ring, as you say, sort of kind of rammed his head into the sharp corner of the ring steps. His eye into the sharp corner of the ring steps. He had to get doctor out and everything and made quite a meal out of it. Hopefully, Kenny, Ray's going to do this with a little bit more conviction than his fall off the roof.
Yeah, you'd hope so. I'm hoping maybe he'll have he'll have some head trauma from like the fall and then the eye thing, and maybe he'll become like a pirate for a while. And we'll just get some funny Rey Mysterio stuff. Captain Ray Sparrow.
It worked great for Paul Burchill, didn't it?
well, he was also meant to be pumping his sister, which wasn't a great storyline that they came up with for him. Poor guy.
That's it. I mean, even in the TV-14 era, which is the era in which that started, you know, WWE was, you know, very cautious with that one and wouldn't quite say what was going on, and you know, even when it was implied, it was uncomfortable enough that no one really wanted to watch it.
WWE. I've got to give big props to on this show. I thought Shayna Baszler was great on this show.
Oh, she was amazing, wasn't she?
Because she got the big win over Natalia, but it was actually the promos backstage that really just set her apart. Talk us through them. They were great.
Yeah, I mean, she's backstage and she said, "How stupid do you have to be to get knocked up when you're the champion?"
Classic.
Then she made some more disparaging remarks. But the final line, the writers must have had a laugh working on this one, Kenny. They must have been like just slapping each other on the back. good one. Hey. And then Shayna said, "That kid's gonna suck. You know who the father is? I rest my case."
Drop.
This was Shayna's best night on the main roster by a mile. You know, she has basically saved her career on this show. I mean, it was really funny. Well, later on when Natalia came up and confronted her and said to Shayna, "Do you know how bad it makes you look to disrespect the miracle of motherhood?" Baszler said that, "What did Natalia know about being a mother?" And then said, "You know, the Hart dynasty would end with her." And I just thought, my God, that was a Vince. That Vince scripted that one, didn't he? You know, that's the only reason Natalia's there, isn't it? For Vince's amusement, so people can disparage her and belittle her at every turn.
Shayna Baszler had a brilliant... I think Shayna Baszler was probably my favourite performer of the night. And she wasn't on, I mean, and that's even over Asuka, who I love, but I thought she just brought such a dick-like attitude, you know, such a bully attitude to the show that was just great.
You know, totally unapologetic. I mean, it was just, she's just saying what she, you know, she's saying what that character thinks, not mincing her words or anything, just trashing Natalia. I thought Bayley and Natalia had a tremendous match. Very interesting match, different match to what Natalia normally has. And I thought she really shone in this match, Natalia, winning with a knee strike. I thought that match was really well done, but I'm with you, Kenny. Shayna was the star of this show, on the mic and in the ring.
So then we had the main event segment, which was Edge and Randy Orton. Edge comes out and said at WrestleMania that he took umbrage to the advertising and he wanted to get his pound of flesh. Orton then comes out and says, "Congratulations." Then he goes to, you know, the better man won at WrestleMania. He goes to leave, comes back and says, "You know, I tried to be the better man, but I couldn't." And then Orton basically goads Edge by saying, "You know, you might have won at WrestleMania, but you didn't do what I can do, and that's be the better wrestler. You hide behind 29 other wrestlers at the Royal Rumble. You hide behind Last Man Standing at WrestleMania. But it does. It didn't take me 9 years to get back on my feet. 9 years is a long time. They're not traditional wrestling matches, and you don't have it in you anymore. And basically, he says, if you've got the guts, then it's Backlash, it's Edge versus Orton in a straight up wrestling match. And then my favorite thing is Charlie Caruso, who came in and said, that may be the greatest wrestling match of all time. Like, she just she ruined all the atmosphere with that banal quotes that she came out with. But what did you make of the Edge and Orton segment? Was Orton able to sell you on the straight up wrestling match thing? How did they do?
I'm really struggling. I really am struggling after that WrestleMania match. I haven't quite digested that yet. You know, it's still going down, Kenny. it still
PTSD.
feels like the match is ongoing in my head. So at least it will be shorter and it'll be a different match. I think it'll be interesting to see what they do in a straight, one-on-one in-ring scene. I don't think it's going to be the greatest match of all time, Charlie. But I am interested to see it. I am interested to see them wrestle again in a different setting, hopefully for 20 minutes or fewer. We don't need to see them overstay their welcome again. I'm sure they won't. And it almost sort of thing, he's put so much into that feud. I was kind of trying to work out whether they were going to just blow it off with a WrestleMania match or were they going to keep it going. And under normal circumstances, I think it would have ended then, but as these are not normal circumstances, I think they feel like they just need to try and extract some more mileage storyline that they created began the night after Royal Rumble. So yeah, I think it's going to be okay. I think it's going to be hoping that they have a match that sort of erases memories of the WrestleMania match. I think that's the nicest thing I can say about it. How about you?
I enjoyed the WrestleMania match. I seem to be the minority with that, but I think I'm looking forward to seeing what they do. This segment didn't grip me as much, but I have confidence that once we get to Backlash, they'll be able to do something good. So I'm hopeful for them. But I thought Raw was pretty good. There was some good stuff on it, some interesting stories going forward, and I think that the kind of having people from the other brand on now and then will probably help. So overall, pretty positive.
Yeah, definitely. And just alluded to it earlier. I mean, the Viking Raiders and Street Basketball, like a comedy segment with like lots of Curb Your Enthusiasm like music. And it was all comedy. And, Street Profits won 74-2. And then Viking Raiders said, well, we let you win. And they're like, no, you didn't. And then we saw all these Mr. Perfect style shots of them scoring these amazing, baskets. So I thought that was pretty funny. I quite enjoyed that. I'd rather watch them do comedy segments like these than actually have a match. I mean, that match they had, I think it was on Raw the previous week. I mean, I was losing the will to live. I mean, it was just so dull. It was just so tedious. So I'm kind of curious as to see where this goes. The only problem is, what's at the end of the tunnel? What's at the end of the journey? A match, which I don't want to see. So I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the story, but I don't think I'm going to enjoy the outcome, which will be obviously another title match.
Well, that's it for us here in the main podcast. We'll be back next week with more. We've got more on the overrun over on Patreon at patreon.com/insidetheropes. You get any plugs this week for us, Finn, as we leave?
No, not really, no. Just Twitter.
You have to think about it. Am I going to plug my books? Am I not? What am I going to do?
I think people already know about those. So I'm going to be doing another What's Going Down for Patreon over the next week. So that will be available sometime next week. So I'm looking forward to starting that actually later today. But nothing as of yet to plug, Kenny. How about yourself?
Just Patreon, as I said, patreon.com/insidetheropes, where you get this podcast 24 hours early and an overrun. There's pay-per-view reviews, retro pay-per-view reviews. There is more on our Patreon than there is in anybody else's you will get out there. And while we've not got live events running, this is really a way to kind of keep us going. So if you have anything spare, we would much appreciate it. And also youtube.com/insidetheropes for interview content. Leo Rush is up there now, a 30-minute interview I did with him, which is a very good interview. Very honest take on his run in WWE. Old live show clips go up there all the time, so it's a good time. So Finn, I hope you enjoy the rest of your week, whatever you're getting up to.
And you as well, Kenny. Yeah, and you as well. Yeah, I'm not doing any more DIY. I think we'll have some time in the garden. looking forward to that.
I'll just
How about
be
yourself. What have you got planned this weekend?
I'll just be drinking heavily. So, you know, just continuing my slow descent towards death. So that's it from me. We'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.